Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Highly Questionable. I'm Bomani Jones. We got Mina Kimes, Dominique Foxworth. Dan is taking a day for load management, but he decided to send in a message.
Hey, my apologies to the listeners and my colleagues and the staff and ESPN for not being able to get in today. I'm obviously in a sick bed. My substantive gut is nauseated. My heart hurts. I'm really sorry about the unprofessionalism of this, but I can't get in today because, you know, Aaron Rodgers lost and I thought he was going to win at the end and I'm too wounded to work.
To Kirk Cousins. Don't forget about to Kirk Cousins.
Is it concerning that Lamar Jackson keeps bleeping the bed in big games?
All right, so the Ravens lost by 4 points against what appears to be maybe the best team in the NFL. And now, as is typically the case, when they lose a game, it becomes a referendum on Lamar Jackson. But it seems to be a fairly fair question to ask, given that he did not play well in this game. He turned the ball over in this game. And we have seen this from the postseason to now, that when the teams are better, he's not quite as dominant. The only thing I'd say about this is, when he's doing well, we sure talked a lot about how the Baltimore Ravens were putting him in a scheme that used what he did best and allowed him to be successful. That's what we talk about when he does well. When he does poorly, all of a sudden the coaches don't matter. And one thing we did too much of last season with Baltimore was we hyped those coordinators up just a little bit too much. The defensive coordinator calls too many blitzes. The offensive coordinator tends to panic when they get behind and not be the best play caller in the world. So, yeah, we got questions about the Ravens and how Lamar Jackson plays, but I also think we got questions about what the other people on the Ravens do around Lamar Jackson when we start raising questions as to why he's playing the way he has in these games.
Yeah, and I think that extends to the coaches and more to the general manager and the construction of the team around him. So I think bleeping the bed is by far a stretch because it's not like they got blown out. It's not like Lamar didn't make many key plays to keep them in the game. One that comes to mind was when he got his touchdown called back. He went back to the huddle and told those guys, we're going to go get it again. They went and got it again. So Lamar Jackson is still the most pivotal piece on that offense. But it hurts when Willie Snead is your leading receiver. That's a problem. No disrespect to Willie Snead, but he got caught from behind by a linebacker named Splain. Like, that is their leading receiver, their number one threat right now is a difficulty when that's the guy you have to go to make things happen. And it's not to absolve Lamar, like he was inaccurate and he made some poor decisions, held onto the ball too long. But it's hard for me to look at this guy and the way his career has developed in the current NFL and suggest that the problem with the Ravens is somehow Lamar Jackson.
Yeah, that same linebacker, Dominique, Robert Spillane, also picked off Lamar, and it was a really bad interception. And Lamar himself said after the game, we lost because of my turnovers, and he was correct. Like, the Ravens should have won that game. The defense played really well. Lamar Jackson had more yards through the air than Roethlisberger. They had more yards on the ground as well. The turnovers were the difference. Now, as a Ravens fan, that wouldn't concern me too much because he historically has not turned the ball over. What would concern me is that he has struggled as a passer under pressure. But Bomani, you're absolutely right. The reasons for that go far beyond Lamar Jackson. Some of it is scheme. Some of it is the absence of playmakers. As Dominique pointed out, this is the second cheapest offense in football. We never talk about that. Okay. And some of it is the fact that he lost his Hall of Fame guard, Marshall Yanda, before the season. Now it appears they lost their left tackle, Ronnie Stanley, who's very good as well. That's going to be a problem going forward. The fact that the offensive line has regressed in a big way. Because Lamar Jackson, while he is very good and he is not the problem on this team, might not be good enough as a passer to transcend the situation around him.
Does this feel like the end of the Patriots dynasty?
Oh, man, I thought we were going to ask if this felt like the end of Cam Newton's career. But no, we're going around to the Patriots dynasty. It's hard to answer that as a question of a dynasty just because they lost so many dudes to COVID opt-outs, right? Guys that you've actually heard of on a roster where you don't know the names of the dudes generally. The dudes whose names you know were like, man, I ain't going out there to catch that, not to play for the Patriots. So that's how you wind up with last year's defense being one of the greatest we'd ever seen and this one's being a little bit porous. And then that's when we come around to Cam Newton and the skill position players and everything else that is going on. Like, this is not a team that had the talent that they had in previous years. And in previous years, they were making the most out of the talent they had. Now, I don't really know how much you can make out of that talent, especially when Cam Newton is not going to be close to the Cam Newton that we saw in previous years.
The Patriots dynasty ended last year. Like, why are we asking this now? What about last year's team made you think this squad can win the Super Bowl? Yes, they had a much better defense, although I don't think they were quite as good as they looked in the beginning of the season. But the offense wasn't good last season. We saw that, right, at the end of the year, and they're still not good. As far as Cam Newton goes, yesterday he did look a little bit better than he has in previous weeks, but he's not a top 10 quarterback, and they would need a top 10 quarterback at this point to elevate the team around Cam Newton, because that team is mediocre. So the Patriots need to do what the rest of us on this godforsaken planet are doing and just start planning for 2021. That took a dark turn. But it's true.
I think that the Patriots dynasty cannot be over, and this team's destiny for this year can already be over. Tamina's point, planning for 2021 is probably the right move. I think for all the reasons you guys mentioned, in part because of all the COVID opt-outs, but because they had so many injuries on that offensive side of ball where the playmakers were too bad for Tom Brady to work with. They are now worse this year than they were last year. Tom Brady was carried a lot by a really great defense last year. This defense can't seem to figure out how to stop the run, which is like the most basic thing that any football coach will teach. And we know that Bill Belichick is always focused on the basics. So I don't think that the dynasty is necessarily over. They can put it all together and recreate it going forward next season. But I think this season is obviously over. And this team isn't as bad as they look. I mean, you think about that Seahawks game, would have been a great win. It was 1 yard from that. You think about yesterday, they could have won that game without the fumble. I'm just saying that there were mistakes and key moments that could have gone the other way. Two big wins against big-time opponents. We would be looking at this team a lot differently if those plays went the other direction.
And let's go ahead and throw this one out here right now, because I've seen this. I think The Athletic has had somebody write, it's time for Jarrett Stidham. It ain't never time for Jarrett Stidham. Because one thing that's been interesting to watch this season has been that after Cam Newton has played these games poorly, like the maturation from where he was in year two, where he seemed to just be a child after bad games, and now in standing and being like, look, I need to play better. Jarrett Stidham can't come to no post-game press conference and say, I need to play better. He's coming and saying, y'all knew who I was when y'all asked me to play, right? Like, that dude, the chance of him being good, I don't see it. Cam, maybe. The other dudes, come on, man.
Bomani, it is time for Jarrett Stidham. Do you know why? Put up a picture of Trevor Lawrence here and then one of Justin Fields. Just put those up right at the end of that comment. Stidham time!
That is what you're telling your fans right then and there, right? They Jarrett Stidham, we're planning for 2021.
Should the Dolphins feel more or less confident in Tua today?
Yo, it's kind of funny that we worry that how dare you put Tua Tagovailoa out there in a game where Aaron O'Donnell's going to be on the other side in his first game in the league. It's going to be terrifying for him. And then it was Jared Goff that looked like he had Aaron Donald chasing him down, except they play on the same team. Tua looked like the dude that was playing quarterback for a team that scored 3 non-offensive touchdowns in the first half. They did not need very much from him. Luckily, because he did not actually give them very much. Like, you saw a flash on that touchdown pass that he could throw it out in front of a dude running a goal line slant. That's cool. But outside of that, there wasn't really anything to see. Like, if you didn't know that dude was the number 5 pick in the draft, you wouldn't have assumed that he was the number 5 pick in the draft. I'm not going to hold that against him, but I'm not going to pretend like he was something he wasn't in his first game.
Yeah, I think it's easy to walk away thinking less of him. But if you want to take the optimistic view, I think it's that he didn't make the big mistake and he was able to manage the game, which I think a lot of great quarterbacks start out as game managers. And we can look no further than Seattle, where Russell Wilson was a game manager to start his career. Dak Prescott also managed the game to start a career. Russell absolutely managed the game to start a career.
Oh, go back and look at some of those team. Stat
lines. Defensive-oriented team. Of course, they weren't that bad as they were today, but the point was they were not relying on him to make all the plays to win the game. Relying on him to be smart and allow the defense and special teams to win the game for them, which is what happened yesterday. If you can ease into your quarterbacking career like Tua seems to be right now, I think that bodes well for you going forward rather than being thrown into an awful situation and just frantically flailing and obviously eventually flaming out of the league.
Setting aside the fact that Russell Wilson started his career with some incredible performances, go back and watch the Chicago and New England games, nothing like what we saw from Tua yesterday. Setting aside that important fact, because that was a terrible comparison, I actually feel better about Tua because I feel better about the Dolphins' defense and their ability to carry him as he develops as a quarterback. Yesterday, I had a flashback to when Brian Flores was hired. It was coming off of that 13-3 Super Bowl in which the Patriots' defense came out with this incredible game plan against the Rams, who they played yesterday. And when they hired Flores, people said, well, that was Bill Belichick's defense. What do we really know about Brian Flores? Flash forward to today, Brian Flores is an incredible defensive coach, and we should have given him more credit back then. Yesterday, they had a brilliant game plan against the Rams. Again, Sean McVay said, we weren't prepared for all of those zero blitzes. The disguise coverages were fooling Goff. You saw that Christian Wilkins interceptions, right? It was simulated pressure. He had no idea what was coming. This defense is good. They are well coached, and they're the best unit in the AFC East. They might be good enough to win the division. Tua just needs to be okay.
Yeah, and two things on Brian Flores on that note. One, how good a coach does he have to be that we're actually talking about playoffs when we thought this time last year that that team might go 0-16? Two, you made a great point about that, that people assumed that was Bill Belichick's game plan. No, they had a different defensive coordinator the year before in the Super Bowl, and they got roasted by the Eagles before the Flores defense shut down the Rams. You know who that defensive coordinator was? It's that dude with a pencil behind his ear in Detroit with a laminated play sheet.
Coming up next on my Soul Stevie Show.
We all know, even football players know, punching people in a helmet really solves nothing other than making your hand hurt. However, you get your point across that I mean business. I'm so angry that I don't care about me or you or anything else. A level of crazy is established.
Do you question if this went down the way Javon Wims thought it was going to?
Yo, so a friend of mine called me when this happened and tried to describe all of what was going on. And it was the most ridiculous thing that I had ever heard. So we're going to walk you back a bit. This is Chauncey Gardner-Johnson. He plays for the Saints. He's a defensive back. Getting into it right here, having a little thing. Right. He snatched the mouth guard off of Javon Wims' helmet. Like, why would you do that, right? Like, I don't know how this falls on the levels of chain snatching, but he decided to do that. Now, after that happened, the Saints defense went to the sideline. The Bears offense went to the sideline. Each was on the sideline for 11 minutes when apparently the young man Wims was just furious. And how do we know he was furious? Look at this. All right, so he takes it up at number 20, but no, this is where he's got the real problem. Ooh. Yo, hey, have you ever seen somebody so surprised to get hit in the face that they get hit in the face and they're like, yo, what is going on here? I'm very confused.
Well, this was amazing because when it happened on the field, nobody knew the backstory. Like, everything you just laid out about the mouth guard, this dude Evan Sachs on Twitter put together a thread, sort of a Zapruder film explaining what happened. But in real time, Bomani, when Wim sucker punched him, everybody was also sucker punching. We were very confused about this interaction.
Dominique, have you seen anything like this before?
I'm thoroughly in shock. Like, I don't understand the idea going back to Chauncey Gardner-Johnson's mouthpiece snatch. Like, that's a move that I've never seen. Like, I, as a player, have tried to get under people's skin, had people try to get under my skin, and to have your mouthpiece stolen, like, you're trying to hurt my teeth? You're trying to get me concussed? Like, it's so dangerous and mean and unnecessary. And then to follow up with the helmet punch, which we all know, even football players know, punching people in a helmet really solves nothing other than making your hand hurt. However, you get your point across that I mean business. I'm so angry that I don't care about me or you or anything else. A level of crazy is established when you walk up unprovoked in that moment and punch a man in the helmet and then he doesn't react the way you want. So you know what? Have another one of these.
That was the part that got me. You are going to know that I am here. Now, is this dude, though, Gardner Johnson, is he the new Courtland Finnegan? Right? Because apparently he stuck his fingers in somebody's face mask earlier in the game. I believe that he had drawn the ire of the Bears by making some sort of joke about Tariq Cohen being short. Like, is he that guy? Because, again, he got stole on and did not lose his composure, which is some veteran troll-like behavior.
Yeah, I think you're right, because the punch in the face you can understand as a crime of passion. Like, you're not thinking clearly. You just have to punch somebody in the face because you don't know what else to do. But to have it, to sit on it for 11 minutes and come back, and the best plan you could come up with, I'm going to snatch your mouthpiece back and then slap you in the face mask. Twice.
By the way, this dude ain't getting suspended. Like, I heard people talk about, I'm sure that he is going to be suspended.
What?
I mentioned Courtland Finnegan. Can we run the clip of Andre Johnson giving Courtland Finnegan the beats? Because this dude didn't get suspended for this. And when it came up, I remember the question was asked, and the people in the league were like, we've never suspended anybody for fighting on the field before. They don't do that in this league.
Do you question if Joe Burrow's athleticism should still be sneaky?
All right, so the producer just told me that in every game that Joe Burrow has played in the NFL, his team has covered. And people who are really concerned about things like that also use phrases like sneaky athleticism. Now, let's look at Joe Burrow, who was plenty mobile in college if you paid any attention. Let's see what he's doing here in the NFL. There we go. Okay, yep. That looks like LSU Joe Burrow to me. Oh, that's impressive.
Look at that.
Okay. I like Joe Burrow.
All for 4 yards.
To be fair, I knew Joe Burrow was athletic, but that was more athleticism than I knew him to have in an NFL game against NFL defenders. So I'm defending the small-minded people who are surprised by Joe Burrow's athleticism because I knew he was athletic and I wasn't expecting that.
Both of the two white quarterbacks taking the first round are very athletic, right? Like Justin Herbert, we're going to call him. Justin Herbert can scoot too. Here's my question. What's it going to take? Like, what year? Is it going to be 2040, 2050, 2060 when we're no longer surprised by an athletic white quarterback? Like, you could take a white guy and you could run like a 4.3 40, and some announcer in the NFL in 100 years is still going to be surprised when he runs his own read.
So here's my question. What's going to take longer for people to realize that Joe Burrow can run or Dwayne Haskins can't? Like, I imagine when they was at Ohio State, that was real confusing for a whole lot of people. That happens sometimes where you wind up in college where they got the slow black dude and the fast white dude, and the whole town is just discombobulated. They don't know how to make sense of any of it.
I never forget when my first start in the NFL, we were playing against Byron Leftwich, and we put in a spy that week. We put it in the game plan, and I was looking around like, this is the NFL? We never called it. We never called it. But the prior week, we didn't have a spy defense in the game plan. But that week, we put it in. We just put in a complexion-based defense, just in case, because I know you got it in there somewhere.
Let me tell you this, Josh Allen, you better watch out. You're in year 3, but by year 5, they're going to figure out what you can do, and you're finally going to see a spy.
Do you question if this play being called back makes it any less impressive?
All right, now at the time of this play, Rutgers is down to Indiana 37-21. That is two full scores, two touchdowns, two two-point conversions. This is fourth down, and Rutgers knows it is now or never. Look at this.
I think 71 is the real star of this, right? That's what everyone's talking about?
Yes. Don't give it away. Don't give it away.
I'm just alerting the people to keep an eye on 71.
Here's number 71 right here.
Yes!
Hello! Oh, great catch. Great catch. There we go. Where's the ball? Oh, 77. I love that none of the big dudes thought that this was their time to make a dream come true. Here we go.
Almost.
Shout out to number 54. He must have been breathing heavy as hell by then. Now, they called it back because they said that one of the laterals was not there. I just applaud Rutgers for realizing it was now or never, and they actually did it and almost made it work. It was also your reminder that even though they in the poll, Indiana, still kind of Indiana.
I mean, it's an amazing play. It's pretty fun. I've never ever had the opportunity to be a part of one of those plays, but I've always wished I could. Like, it seems like a fun thing to do. And at that moment in game, it's not something you normally do with a minute 30 left, even though I guess it was 4th and 32, so you have no choice. So it's fun. It's college football. They're just there to get educated anyway, so no one's really upset about the outcome. Just have a good time.
Do you think 71 has ever like thrown a ball before or like handled it? I always think that when offensive linemen end up with the ball in their hands and they always look completely surprised and delighted, and sometimes they make incredible plays and we all get excited because fat guy touchdown, but most of the time they look like they've literally never passable.
Like, how does it ever come up? Like, look at that number 71. It doesn't look like when he got there for freshman football, he was playing wide receiver and then grew into being a tackle. He'd been blocking since he was 7 years old.
Tonight on ESPN, Monday Night Football, Bucks and Giants.
Oh boy, this is what market size gets you. The Giants on Monday Night Football. Now, what we got here, last week we talked about Peyton Manning. He does the detail show on ESPN Plus, and he's talking about this one pass Tom Brady threw that he's convinced he was not throwing to Rob Gronkowski on purpose, or at least he's not sure. And he says that Tom Brady would never admit that because Peyton Manning is being a little bit of a hater. Now, let's go to Tom Brady's Instagram to see what his Halloween costume was. Oh, wow. Yeah, he threw it right back. And I don't think these guys are like friends. Like, these aren't jokes amongst buddies. These are dudes who used to play against each other. I sense all the shade in all directions. Oh, Mina, are you intrigued?
I am. I mean, we all know how this one is going to play out, but I actually think the Bucks might be the best team in the NFL. It's kind of between them and the Chiefs, so I am intrigued to watch them and see if they deliver on that promise.
Dominique, you intrigued?
I'm intrigued by the game. I'm not intrigued by two old white guys fighting over the being king of the hill.
I'm going to keep on laughing because I thought all that stuff was funny myself. Like, Dominique is not about to ruin the joy and humor of Peyton Manning not being able to let it go. And Tom Brady, I don't care. I don't. Somebody ordered me a number 18 jersey. It's going up in the yard. All right. We appreciate you joining us. Dan will be back from load management tomorrow. Meanwhile, you keep making that face.
Every time you say that, it makes me so uncomfortable.
All right, fine. You took a day off.